no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Dave Manuk sliding into the chair late as always, but we'll forgive him this time yet again for doing so. This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. Bringing you North America's top-rated comedians for the past 35 years. Celebrate your upcoming birthday with great deals for you and all your friends. For more information, go to rumorscomedyclub.com and be sure to try the nachos. You won't be disappointed. Mr. Ginsberg seems to be eating something already. A bagel. You're eating a bagel that's been sitting there for at least the last, you know, hour plus. Is that correct? It's got to be a pretty cold bagel at this point in time.
What I have in my hand is a Bagelsmith bagel, a Montreal-style bagel. I toasted it before I came over to Dave M's house. It's got peanut butter on it. If you haven't had a Bagelsmith bagel, check them out. 185 Carlton, bagelsmith.ca. It's the best bagel in the city, and it's appropriate because the Jets are playing the Habs.
But what's not appropriate is toasting a bagel an hour and a half ago and then eating it.
More importantly, what's even less appropriate is Ezzy masticating the food and having everyone subjected to being listening to him.
Yeah, we muted his mic, so thankfully okay. Nobody will have to hear him chewing. But Dave, you know you're gonna have peanut butter all over your wall, over your furniture.
Oh, trust me, as he showed me the bagel, I thought, oh great, it's sesame. It's gonna be all over the place.
Yeah, and he's definitely not cleaning up after himself. There's no chance.
I couldn't toast
like
it here. I don't have time to toast it at Dave M's house, so I did the smart thing. I toasted it at home, wrapped it up in a little aluminum foil, brought it over. Now I'm having a little nosh.
Ronnie's bringing up an old radio memory. Remember that one time Ezzy found a pizza under his pillow?
Yeah. And ate it. Like 3 days later. It wasn't the next morning.
I think he found it at like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning the next day.
He passed out with the pizza.
It was heavily liquid that night.
Oh, this is great, Ezzy.
That's it. I'm really glad you're doing it.
I know we have the power to put people in timeouts. I think Ezzy could be put in a timeout right now.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean,
I know you like a Bagelsmith bagel as well, so I think you're just jealous that you don't have one right now in your mouth.
No, I would have the sense to not eat it on air. Let's just remove him from the picture. There you go. He's gone for a little while. I think that's an appropriate reaction until he's done eating his bagel. He can come back in a couple minutes. Yeah, Dave, obviously, let's talk about the Shifley suspension. We're going to get to more of that throughout the course of the broadcast. You know, 4 games for Mark Shifley. To me, it's more than I thought it would be. Yeah. To me, it's excessive. And here's my thinking around it.
Okay.
One, there's not a great precedent for the NHL to point to when coming up with the answer. Two, the hockey world outside of Winnipeg,
okay,
thought that it was a bad play that deserved a serious suspension. I think from the NHL's perspective, it's easy for them to suspend a player from Winnipeg, from the city of Winnipeg, that plays for a team in Winnipeg without there being much blowback. If they suspend a guy on a questionable play, you know, for an excessive amount of time, like, you know, from Vegas, there's an outcry. There's a hue and a cry. If they do it from a guy from Toronto, there's an outcry. If you do it from a guy in Montreal or New York or wherever it might be, there's an outcry. 4 games for somebody from Winnipeg, there's not going to be an outcry. The NHL is not going to be worried about there being a blowback to the suspension. Was the Shifley hit a bad hit? Yes, it was in my mind. He deserved to be suspended. I don't have a problem with that. But 4 games is not
too much.
Is not equitable to anything else we've seen from the NHL Department of Player Safety. And I do believe, and I know people are going to say, Drew, you're a conspiracy theorist. Drew, you're a whole.
I was going to suggest you take the tinfoil that Ezzy wrapped his bagel in and put it on.
For a second, I thought Jesse Ventura popped on the show.
Totally legitimate. Those are fair comments you guys are making. I do believe. And this isn't the first time I've thought that. There was we talked about it last night after the show ended. Back in 2015, Dustin Byfuglien received a 4-game suspension for cross-checking JT Miller. It was late in the year. The Jets were right in the heart of that in that heart of the playoff battle that year. And Byfuglien got four games for the suspension for his cross check on JT Miller in front of the net. I firmly believe in my heart of hearts, and I'm not an unreasonable, irrational person, as most people know that are watching this show, that Byfuglien got four games back in 2015 because it happened against the New York Rangers, and Larry Brooks, was writing about it, and Larry Brooks was making a big deal about how horrible of a play it was. And NHL head offices are in New York. So who's the one hockey columnist that they read night in and night out, or day in and day out? It's Larry Brooks. His words have influence. So Byfuglien, again, it's easy to suspend somebody from Winnipeg for a longer time than they will suspend somebody from a lot of other markets in the NHL. And I think that is partially what partially got Mark Scheifele his four-game suspension.
Yeah, and you're right. We will never know that, but it makes sense. And I think, I see a lot of people in the comment section agreeing with you, which makes me a little bit nervous, Dave. But, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it was, the last minute of the game and, Jake Evans leaving it on a stretcher. And I think, when you talk about a player's previous history, yeah, Scheifele's never been suspended in the NHL. I believe he's never been suspended in the OHL as well. But I think that, four games is too much. And I think if Scheifele was suspended for two games, then that would have made a lot of sense. But now he's going to miss essentially the whole series. And the precedent just isn't there for that type of suspension.
And we'll talk more about the Scheifele suspension throughout the program. We'll talk about it a little bit with our good buddy, Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. CJ, good morning. Nice to see you. How are you, Marathon Man?
I'm doing well. Haven't got my run in yet. It's hot here today, so it's going to be a sweaty one once I'm done with you guys.
We certainly appreciate you giving us your time to talk a little bit about some puck and not really the game that you necessarily think about when it's hot and sweltering outside. But it was here in Winnipeg as well last night, almost close to 40 degree temperatures for your typical June playoff game, but maybe not typical Winnipeg weather. CJ, we were talking about the Scheifele suspension, and obviously that has been a huge storyline for the past 48 hours, and the Jets are down two games to none, and you can't necessarily directly point to Scheifele's absence as the reason, but it certainly didn't help the Jets last night. Why, from your perspective, is four games the right number? Because from our perspective, and admittedly we're in Winnipeg and maybe we're wearing a little bit of rose-colored glasses, but I don't think so. It just seems like it's a suspension that's based more on the terrible visual of Jake Evans leaving the ice than necessarily the illegality of the hit. A suspendable hit from my perspective, no question, but I don't know that it was a four-game suspendable hit.
Well, I think the fundamental issue with this, guys, is do we ever know what any suspension length is going to be? Like, I mean, with any play involving any two players from any two teams, mm-hmm. It's really hard for those of us on the outside of the process to get a clear understanding. I give the Department of Player Safety this credit. For the last number of years, they put out these videos. I think they're trying to, normalize the process. They're trying to show, give us a window into why they arrive at the decisions. But even as someone who, talks to those people that make those calls, I don't always understand. And so it's hard for me to give you a good answer there on why four games. I mean, it clearly was a devastating hit. And, the fact he is stretchered off is a factor there. I know he didn't end up going to hospital, Jake Evans, but, obviously didn't play game two. I'm not sure if and when we'll see him back in the series himself for Montreal. And it's probably an unnecessary hit ultimately in that position. But at the same time, I understand Mark Scheifele's a competitor. And, it's tough for me to give you a stern or a clear thought on why it should be that long, other than there was definitely ample opportunity for him not to throw the check. And I think that's probably where they came down on that. Sometimes, say like the Kadri hit, which, ended up getting an 8-game suspension in the middle of the ice. That's a really split second decision. Mark Scheifele in relative terms had time not to throw the hit. I think it was clear, when he was easing up kind of in the middle of the Jets defensive zone coming back there that Evans was going to be able to score and he made a bad decision and they wanted to punish him. But, it's a tough one. And I think it'll be a tough one if the Jets don't come back and get in this series because we're going to view it as a play that had a real serious impact on the outcome.
To your point there, Chris, about how, you know, it's basically you're spinning the roulette wheel when it comes to the NHL Department of Player Safety, oftentimes with how they come to their conclusions. Is that ever going to change? I mean, is there anything that fundamentally the general managers, you know, in the NHL, you know, can say to the head office of the NHL that is going to result in inconsistency occurring? I mean, it, you know, and maybe it's a function of this. The game is too fast to really come to any sort of standards when it comes to suspendable plays. But, that, you know, if you're a general manager, you have to sometimes just be sort of throwing your hands up in the air, whether you're on the, you know, whether you're on the side of your player was injured by an illegal hit or your player delivered an illegal hit. You never have any really real clue as to what ruling is going to be handed down.
Yeah, I'm an optimist by nature, but I really don't think we're going to get the consensus on this. You know, I just think the plays themselves are too random. I mean, they're trying to apply a consistent standard, but I've watched a lot of hockey games. I don't know that I've ever seen a play exactly like that Mark Scheifele hit, right? I mean, mm-hmm. A factor here is that he comes 180 feet down the ice. Now, for the first 160 or maybe even more, he's literally trying to break up the goal. You can see him back-checking because his net's empty and there's a rush going the other way. It's not as though he came 180 feet just to throw the hit by any stretch. But, you know, it's such an unusual play. I don't recall anything like it. I just think that we're going to be forever in circles on this. I really do. I think that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be increased, I guess, focus from the Department of Player Safety's end to try to get more consistency, maybe even to explain things a little deeper than they do, open the curtain even more. Because I think the more we all understand, maybe it's easier to process these decisions. But ultimately, you watch 1,000 hockey games and you still see something every once in a while you have no sort of track record of seeing. And you know, that's where I think some of the confusion comes in.
Chris, what has been your assessment of the first couple of games? They obviously haven't gone the Jets' way. And last night's game, in terms of excitement, was not a very exciting game, especially when you flip over and you watch the Golden Knights Avalanche series. And that third period was about as good as it gets in terms of playoff hockey. But what are you seeing? Like, we've obviously talked about the series a lot, the first hour and 20 minutes of the show here. But is it just a Jets team that's just not generating enough offense? Like, is it a team that really misses Mark Scheifele and Paul Stastny? Like, what are you kind of seeing through the first couple?
Well, that's definitely a factor. But, you know, I covered the Canadiens in the first round, went to the games they played against Toronto here in Toronto, and then I also went to Game 6 in Montreal. You know, to me, I'm seeing a Montreal team that's what they're getting good at. You know, they found something here. To me, it's almost beyond explanation that a team doesn't have a 5-game win streak for 4 years and delivers it with 3 games to stave off elimination and then the first 2 to open the next round. I guess this lends some credence to that idea. If you get in the playoffs, anything can happen if the right things break your way. But, you know, to me, what Montreal does so well is they really make it difficult in the neutral zone and at their blue line in terms of entering with speed. You know, I haven't watched the Jets nearly as closely as you guys this year, but I've seen them play a fair bit. It seems to me when they're at their best, they're attacking in transition. You're seeing Ehlers and Connor, you know, come up the ice and make dangerous rushes. You know, that's sort of, you know, from a Jets end where I see the chess match being played. When you're down some of your top offensive weapons and players that maybe can help you do that, that's going to hurt. But, you know, I don't think they're out of the series by any stretch. Montreal is a team. You got to get a lead on them. You know, they've played all these last games that they've won ahead in the game. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different ball game if Winnipeg scores first in game 3 because Montreal, you know, does struggle to score at times. I know their power plays come on here of late the last few games, but it's really been not a positive for them for most of this season. And so, you know, I think the focus has to be finding ways to generate a little better offense. I heard Paul Maurice say, you know, get to the net. You know, it's going to take some ugly goals, I think. You know, what stood out to me, too, is Carey Price. He's been really good, like really, really good. But I haven't seen him, like, stealing games here, you know, even in the end of the Leafs series. It wasn't like he's making 45 saves a night and they're barely hanging on. I think the team game in front of him has been a factor. And, you know, if you go to Montreal, there's 2 things on your mind. It's breaking through that defensive sort of zone trap, whatever we want to call that, and getting ahead in the game, because I do think that can shift the dynamic in the series.
Chris Johnston is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. You know Chris from his great work with our friends at Sportsnet.
You know, Chris, as he touched on it a little bit in his opening to his question to you about that Vegas and Colorado series, and to me, when I flipped on that game, it was like a complete opposite. How much of a difference is that going to have, though, for whatever team emerges out of the North to have to go into that environment? I mean, those teams are unbelievable anyways, but to have to go into that type of environment and play in front of 17,000 fans when you haven't done it, you know, the most you've done is 2,500 in Montreal, 500 here in Winnipeg. What kind of difference, what kind of advantage do you think see that being for those teams, like either Colorado or Vegas?
I think for at least one game, it's huge, Dave. Like, I was at the game last Saturday night at the Bell Center. It was the first game back in Canada with fans. It was 2,500 people, and I think that arena holds almost 22,000. It's the largest rink in the league. You'd think that that wouldn't make a difference. I was literally shaking the whole game, like just sort of unable to get my heart rate under control because, you know, much like I assume you guys are the same, I just haven't been around people in 18 months almost. And like, you know, 2,500 people in an arena when you haven't done it, even as much as I've been around big games, and like it made a difference in the atmosphere. And I think it was an advantage for the Canadians in that particular night. I mean, might be something even to consider with what the Jets are going to face, you know, playing game three on Sunday. But, you know, for whatever team emerges here and then goes and plays in a truly full rink with full blast. I mean, Vegas is one of my favorite places to go to a game at the best of times. I just think it's an awesome, it's like being in a nightclub. It's unreal. just the feel around a game. And that includes when you're there on a Tuesday night in February, but then also, you know, now when you're talking about a team that's marching towards the possibility of a Stanley Cup. So I think for sure, at least the first time back in that, even though all these players have obviously played in front of fans a lot over the years, when you haven't been around it for a long time, you almost forget what it's like. And it'll be nuts. I think it'll be a real did you lose me?
No, we can still hear you.
We can hear you. We can't see you, though.
You okay, turned into an icon, Chris.
Well, I look better that way anyway, but you know, I do think it's going to be a factor. I think it's difficult. I mean, what can the league do? It's all because of local health restrictions and all these things. I just have to hope too that, you know, as time goes on here, I don't know what the exact plans are, but the Canadian teams can get more fans too and sort of even that up. But it's going to be huge. You know, if someone has to go on the road for game one, like it could be 10-1 for the other team just with the sort of scare factor there.
Well, you know, in addition to the scare factor that you mentioned, Chris, have you seen anything from, you know, either Winnipeg or Montreal that would lead you to believe that competitively they can match up against either Vegas or Colorado in the next round? Because we know that's going to be the matchup. But to me, and I think to a lot of other people who've been watching both series, it's as one-sided gets. And not like, you know, we've seen sometimes, you know, Columbus upsetting Tampa Bay. I don't see any realm, you know, all things being equal, that the North Division champion is going to have a hope or a prayer against who comes out of Vegas or Colorado.
Well, I haven't seen anything to prove it, but hockey's a crazy game, right? Like every once in a while, Latvia beats Canada or whatever. Like there are ways that I think that these teams can do it. I mean, the fact that both of them have such tremendous goaltenders is one place to start. You know, obviously, we've seen it with Montreal that they can really lock things down.
Oh, looks like we may have lost Chris altogether there. So hopefully we'll get him back on and
back.
There you go. You're there.
I don't know why my camera doesn't want to work, but
you know.
Anyways, you know, I do think we've seen enough from Montreal defensively that maybe they got a shot. But no, I mean, gun to my head, if I have to bet my house on it, I'm not betting on one of the Canadian teams in that series. But it doesn't mean there's not reason to watch and reason to try if you're those teams. I do think crazy things happen. Injuries, suspensions, all this stuff goes on in the playoffs. You know, hockey's a crazy game with rubber on ice. Like, the best team doesn't always win, frankly. And so, you know, it's a long shot that either of these teams ends up playing for the cup, but I'm not going to say it can't happen.
Chris, what has stood out to you in the Eastern Conference? Because I guess if we're calling it there we go. We see you again there, Chris. You know, the Boston Islanders series. and then obviously, you know, Carolina, the big, goal from Jordan Staal, which we originally thought was Sebastian Aho's goal. But what are you seeing from those two series? Because it looks like, you know, those series are wide open. And you know, in terms of the Tampa Bay Lightning, I mean, the way Victor Hedman's playing, it looks like he hasn't skipped a beat. But what are you seeing, I guess, in those two series? And who do you think, who do you like to eventually come out of there? Because it doesn't look like it's as clear-cut necessarily as the West, as we were talking about with, it looks like whoever wins the Vegas-Colorado series is kind of destined to be in the Cup final.
Yeah, I see it as almost a coin flip in both cases, quite honestly. You know, I pick Carolina. My predictions are terrible. Like anyone listening to this, you should just fade my predictions. Do the opposite of whatever you see me do. You know, I had Edmonton and Jets in four, right, Chris? What's that?
You took the Jets in four, though, right?
Over the Oilers? I might have taken Edmonton in four. It might have been five. Anyway, it couldn't. Either way, I couldn't have been more wrong there. I picked Toronto to beat Montreal. I mean, that's just. All year long, I can't get out of my own way. I just hope they eventually allow me not to make predictions. But I did predict Carolina to go to the Cup final. So, you know, that being said, if I was picking today, because the wind's blowing in a different direction from what I've seen, I think Tampa's going to come out of that round with the Hurricanes. Yeah, I think people are sleeping on Tampa a little bit. You know, they're still a pretty scary team and a pretty deep team. It's maybe not quite as sort of – doesn't melt your eyes the way when you're watching Vegas, Colorado, just the speed that those teams play. And obviously some high-end players, particularly on the Colorado end of things with that speed. But, you know, I think the Lightning having finally got over the hump last year and won a Stanley Cup, I would not rule them out winning a second one in a row. You know, the Boston series is interesting. The Bruins weren't really the Bruins for maybe half this season. I wonder if some of the turnover on their blue line, losing Torrey Krug and Zdeno Chara, they had injuries back there too, but you know, Charlie McAvoy is like growing up before our eyes. I mean, he's really settled into a nice position there. The Taylor Hall acquisition at the deadline is one of those ones, no matter how far they go, there's going to be no regret about that decision that they made. And so, you know, I see kind of Boston and Tampa on this side of the ledger as the top two teams if I was doing power rankings. But look, the Islanders were in the Eastern Conference final last year. They can grind out games with the best of them. You know, I think this is going to actually be an entertaining Stanley Cup tournament. It's going to be hard to keep everyone's attention because it's summer and things are opening up and hopefully we got patios back soon and all that stuff. But, you know, in terms of that teams left, I almost think everyone remaining not in Canada has a legitimate claim to try to win that cup.
Chris, I just heard the ice cream truck, Chris, outside.
Chris Johnston, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris is, of course, with Sportsnet. You're watching the show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Now, Chris, if I asked you about Toronto, folks in our chat would murder me. So I'm not going to ask you about the Leafs specifically, but I am going to ask you about Zach Hyman because his is a very curious situation. So how do you see that one playing out?
Well, my gut tells me he's not going to be back with the Leafs, and it's not because there's any ill will or any disrespect or anything like that. It's just a team that doesn't have a lot of cap space to devote to sort of the middle class, or even I think Zach Hyman might find himself in the sort of what I might call the upper middle class, you know, north of $5 million on his next contract. And it's a player, look, it's, you know, Zach Hyman, I don't know, especially in Winnipeg, people may not be familiar with the story, but you know, he played a couple of years at the University of Michigan where he barely played. He was a long shot to make the NHL in a lot of ways. And his story is one of really beating the odds through work, I believe, and effort and sticking with it. And even his first NHL season, he had something like 28 points despite playing with Auston Matthews. And he's now become a guy who scores at about a 60-point pace. And he hasn't had a full season these last 2 years, but he's been very, very productive. So, you know, this is his chance to cash in. Let's call it as it is. He's entering his age 29 season. He's got great results, great teammate, you know, penalty kill, power play. I mean, he's everything I think contending teams would want, including the Maple Leafs. But they, as far as I can see it, are going to have trouble, you know, making that work in a cap way. And so, you know, I think that this is headed for a little bit of a painful breakup, you know, maybe more on the Leafs side than Hyman's side. I mean, if you're Zach Hyman, this is going to be the payday of your life, and this is going to be a chance to maybe get a little bit more respect. You know, coming up at the same time as a team, as William Nylander, Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, you know, it's been easy to have him sort of be not a focal point for the Leafs organization. I think they've always given him a certain amount of love, but, you know, he had to play. He was the one guy who didn't get paid on his second contract here, and now he's going to get paid on his third contract, and I suspect he's just going to be priced out of the market to be back in Toronto. But stranger things have happened. Maybe the Leafs end up making a bit of a surprise move, you know, trade out one of those players, and that allows them to maybe balance how they pay guys on their lineup. But if not, I mean, it's just another middle-class player that's gone. The last 3 years, the Leafs have lost, off the top of my head, James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak, Nazem Kadri, Andreas Janssen, Kasperi Kapanen. You know, if you add Zach Hyman to that list, really the common denominator there is they just can't pay the middle class of forwards. They have their top end, and they got to keep finding cheaper guys to make it all work.
Dave might be afraid of the people in the chat hating him, but that's not a fear I have. They've hated me for a long time, I think, already. So I'm going to ask you about the Leafs. It seems to me that their first round debacle this year, it was their best chance to that this seems to be the peak of where they were in terms of roster building, in terms of assembling talent, in terms of really getting a chance and getting an opportunity to go far. Why would next year's Leafs team, given the salary cap, given the salary structure they have on their roster, why would next year's Leafs team, and I know you don't have a crystal ball to know exactly what it would look like, but why would next year's Leafs team have a better chance than this year's Leafs team?
It probably won't ever have a better chance on paper or in the models that the smart people are building on, you know, percentage chance to win the cup. But, you know, I think the bet from management is that, you know, Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, John Tavares, that you're going to have one season where all those players show up in the playoffs. You know, in this year's case, Matthews and Marner weren't as productive as you'd like in round one, and Tavares got injured in a freak accident in game one of the playoffs. I think really the bet is that they've assembled more high-level offensive talent than most teams can do in a cap world, and that if you just keep running it back, that 1 year you're going to hit all those numbers. And, you know, look, we can have a debate whether that will happen, but I think that is, in essence, you know, why management is resistant on, like, overreacting to what happened over 12 days against the Montreal Canadiens, is that, yeah, they could go trade Mitch Marner or William Nylander, but they're not going to be able to replace them with commensurate players in those deals. Yes, you can restore some balance to your lineup maybe by doing that. You might get two good players for one excellent player going out. But, you know, that their difference maker is that they have those four guys. And so, you know, it's going to be tougher. I think going back to the old Atlantic division for the Leafs is going to be a monumental challenge. Look, you got to go through Tampa, Boston at minimum. We saw Florida finish top five in points this year. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if this Montreal thing is a mirage or if it's real, but they're in that division too. You know, even Ottawa is at least a tough opponent, maybe not one that scares you in the playoffs yet, but, you know, you don't have easy games against them during the season. And so it's going to be a huge challenge, but, you know, I think you bet on talent. And, you know, Auston Matthews just won the Rocket Richard Trophy. He's a finalist for the Ted Lindsay. He's going to be a finalist for the Hart. You know, they didn't have a great series. Some of it's luck. You know, Matthews hit two posts in that series. He had like 35 shots in seven games. He's got the best shot on earth right now, in my opinion, or at least the most deceptive. And so you just run it back and hope for better results next time.
Speaking of running it back, we'll let you get on with your morning run. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, good friend of ours. CJ, always appreciate your time. Always appreciate your insight. We'll watch you on TV later tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Looking forward to headlines.
Keep kicking ass, boys, and enjoy those games. Maybe a little better result for the Jets coming.
Well, they've been a better road team than a home team. Thanks so much, Chris. So Jets fans here in Winnipeg are hoping for that. Thanks so much, CJ. Take care.
See you guys.
There he goes. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media channels. CJ's appearance on the show was brought to you by Boston Pizza. Boston Pizza is the perfect starting lineup tonight with the BP Game Day Meal Deal. Choose two of your favorite medium gourmet pizzas and triple order of Boston's famous wings, two dipping sauces, all for $54.99. It serves 5 to 6 people. Available for takeout and delivery only at bostonpizza.com or download the MyBP app. We're going to take our final commercial break of the morning. When we come back, Dave and Ezzy will give their insights on the Scheifele suspension. Much more Jets and Habs talk to come. Mark Dumont going to join us at the top of the hour for the perspective from Montreal. You're listening, you're chatting, you're watching Ezzy eat a bagel. We're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. 20 minutes before the top of the hour. Nice job, Dave. Way to slide in there in time. You know, 1 for 3 today. It's very similar to your batting average in the Jewish Men's Softball League, but we appreciate it nonetheless that you were able to execute.
I finished my pickle too, Drew, so you don't have to mute me.
I still might mute you just for the hell of it. I mean, I enjoy the power of being able to remove you from the studio at on my every whim. But I suppose
I'm just worried about Chris Johnston turning into an icon and then magically reappearing again. I will say that was
actually rather entertaining. Just seeing this like pulsating like ring talking with Chris's voice.
We always appreciate CJ joining us here on the program. Before we get back to the Shifley suspension, got to make mention, got to give a shout out, Team Canada. How about that? From being basically on death's door when it came to their chances at the World Hockey Championships this morning, bright and early this morning, as he was awake, Team Canada defeating the United States 4-2 in the semifinals. They're going to move into the finals, the championship game tomorrow morning of the World Hockey Championships in Riga, Latvia. They're going to play the winner of Germany and Finland, a game that I believe is tied up at one goal apiece. So big shout out to all the representatives.
Someone just said it was 2-0 Finland.
Oh, okay. I could be wrong entirely then. 2-0 Finland, says Matthew Thompson. So I apologize. 2-0 Finland. So if that continues, it'll be Canada and Finland in tomorrow morning's World Hockey Championship gold medal game. Yeah. People asking about Cole Perfetti. He was the 13th forward for Team Canada in today's game, which means he didn't really play. He sat on the bench, he got dressed, but he didn't really play in one of those unique rules that are exclusive to the IIHF. So wouldn't expect to see much about him.
Leon Gavanke, the 2018 fifth rounder. He's 2018 fifth rounder.
Playing for Team Germany.
He's playing for Team Germany. Had a critical goal. He scored the game-tying goal the other night, and then they ended up winning that game, I think, in overtime. So good experience for a couple of Jets prospects.
Yeah,
and you know, I have to apologize to Tico Napoli. Not even occur to me for a second that there was going to be somebody PVRing that game that hadn't that was unaware of the score. So my apologies, Tico Napoli. Maybe I freed up the rest of your day, gave you a little bit more time to go spend it outside and enjoy the beautiful unseasonable.
Put sunscreen on, Ticona.
Yeah,
I want Tico and Paulie to explain to me the fascination with flamingos, because I know some people in Transcona, and apparently like everybody's got a flamingo on their grass in Transcona. It's a huge thing there. I know, Drew, you don't leave the south end of the city. You're not like me. I go east, I go north, I go to Garden City, I go to the west end. You're in your little bubble in the south end, but apparently flamingos are a big thing there. So maybe Tico and Paulie can let us know there what's going on.
I would argue from your perspective, Ezzy, that being chased out of every different community in Winnipeg isn't necessarily something you should be bragging about. But that's something you'll have to deal with on your own time later on.
I mention one thing though about the World Championship? First off, if for those who haven't been watching, Perfetti did score the game-winning goal against Kazakhstan, so he has been playing. I'm not sure if he has another goal, Dave. You might know.
I believe he scored against Italy.
So he's got a couple goals. So even though, as Drew mentioned, he's not playing much, in the later rounds, he has been playing. And this is just a great experience, right, guys? 100%. Like, we're not going to get too much into it now because I know we want to get back to it. But he is having a great time over there in Latvia. We should also give a shout out to our good buddy, Dennis Bayak, who's doing an awesome job calling some games play by play. I don't know if he considers me a good buddy. But the other thing, too, Andrew Mangiapane, we got to give him a lot of credit. Dave and I were at that draft in 2015 in Florida. Mangiapane was taken in the sixth round, two spots before Mason Appleton. And I remember thinking, like, the Jets might be able to get Mangiapane. And it turns out Mangiapane was coached by Dale Hawerchuk in Barrie. And I was thinking the Jets might get Mangiapane because of the connection with Hawerchuk. Obviously, Mason Appleton's worked out pretty well. But, pretty awesome that Mangiapane was a sixth-round pick. He's turned into a really good NHL player, and he's been Canada's best player, arguably.
How about the fact that the two sixth-round picks are both having an impact for their respective teams? They were picked very close to each other in that draft. That doesn't happen every year, because usually a sixth-round pick is very much a shot in the dark. Speaking of shots in the dark, the NHL Department of Player Safety Adjudication Committee decided that Mark Scheifele gets four games for his hit on Jake Evans. And, the health and safety and the health and well-being of Jake Evans is of paramount concern to everybody. But people here in Winnipeg are upset, and I think people around the NHL maybe aren't upset about the Scheifele suspension, but they're curious as to the rationale and the reasoning that you come up for four games being the length of time. And I addressed that before we brought CJ in, saying that I think it's a factor of the Winnipeg market, and you can suspend a guy from Winnipeg for longer than you can necessarily suspend a guy from another market without there being any blowback. And I believe that, but I want to hear what you guys have to think about the suspension of four games for Mark Scheifele.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit before CJ came on, right? Like, I was surprised that it was four games. You know, after game one, you know, when we did the post-game show, all of us agreed it was a dirty hit, and we thought there was a good chance the NHL Department of Player Safety was going to look at it and it might result in a suspension. None of us were saying, you know, four games, five games, anything like that. And I think, you know, it goes back to what Chris Johnston was saying, that it was such a unique hit, right? Like, you don't see guys get nailed after scoring an empty net goal on a wraparound. First off, you don't see a lot of wraparound empty net goals. Usually, you know, it's a shot from center or the blue line, right, into the empty cage. But so it's just a unique situation. But to me, it has nothing, guys, to do about charging or, you know, him getting the shoulder before the head. It's that it was on an unsuspecting player and it was unnecessary. That's for me, like, you can't tell me. And I realize Mark Scheifele said yesterday that he was just trying to, you know, disrupt the play and he was trying to prevent Jake Evans from scoring a goal. But I just don't buy that. Don't get me wrong, Scheifele is a good guy. He's the Jets' best offensive player. But you got to be in control of your body and you got to know what you're doing. So I don't think it's a debate in terms of, you know, I know there's some people that think it shouldn't have been a suspension, and those people, I don't think you're going to convert them. But I just think, you know, one game or two games would have made a lot more sense. And I think you have to factor in, too, he did get a major penalty. So, I mean, it did hurt the Jets big time in that game. The game was obviously already over.
The major penalty doesn't mean anything. The game was over. It was 5-3 with no time left on the clock.
But I'm just saying, I mean, the point is that, I mean, the referees did get it right. It should have been a major. But I think just four games is too much. I think it should have been two max. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to – there was so much – it was, like I said, it's interesting. And you reach out to players, whether they're former NHLers, and some would say privately that it was an amazing hit, and they don't have a problem with it. I mean, you know, and then there's others – and others said that publicly, right? You had guys who played in the NHL who said they had no problem with the hit. And if you're going to make that play, Jake Evans, you have to have your head up. You have to be aware you can't have your head down and not be aware that Scheifele's coming. I'm just telling you that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that's what we're hearing.
Commodore said that. Jeremy Roenick said that. I mean, I think I didn't watch it, but it sounds like Sean Avery said something.
Sure. The point is that people who have played the game have said that. Now, again,
Sean Avery, Drew, come on.
Well, I'm just saying.
If we're talking about high fashion in New York, maybe you can reference Avery. Or if it's, you know, smoking cigarettes on the sidewalk in New York and shooting crappy Instagram videos. I'm a Devils fan, so I'm never going to forget Avery for that. But
anyways,
carry on, Dave.
I think what it comes down to, though, is that there's just going to be a lot of opinion. Now, some people felt that Mark Scheifele needed the book thrown at him and he needed to be made an example of. Paul Maurice, in his media availability yesterday, talked about this idea of, well, I think he was trying to say, well, now you've created a precedent. So this better be what you follow and be consistent. And I wrote, that was I want to say it was a Free Press article. And I wrote in the afternoon links and I referenced it again in the morning papers. I said, Paul Maurice is dreaming if he thinks he's ever going to get consistency from the Department of Player Safety. And I think that's all anybody wants. Do I think it was a suspendable hit? I thought so. I thought it was, you know, a one or a two gamer based on what we've seen from the NHL so far. I was surprised by four games, no question about it. You know, Mark Scheifele said yesterday he's not appealing it. He's just not going to be a distraction to the team. I'm not an apologist. When I watched that play initially, no ability for replay. Just I was in the building. I watched the play live. My first blush was, you know, it looked like a dirty hit. Then I watched it again on replay and I thought, well, was it as bad as it looked live? Then I watched it again. I saw a different angle. I thought, okay, well, it doesn't look great for Mark Scheifele. So my point is, hockey guys, and everybody knows this, and this isn't something that's like super insightful, but hockey is such a fast game. So, you know, you're asking guys, and that's why I said refs get credit people, you know, want to dump on refs all the time. And look, with four officials, two refs and two linesmen, you know, they should get calls more often than not.
But and they problem, do. More often than not, they do get calls right.
Right. But I'm getting at is it's a fast game. Things happen quickly. And so, you know, like I said, the same person can see it six different times and come to six different conclusions sometimes because you saw it one way, you saw it at a different angle. And I'm saying we're in the luxury of a replay, slow motion, all of this stuff. I would, you know, like I said, I go back and I think to myself, it definitely merited a suspension based on everything that occurred, based on the way the video looked. I just think four was a little too tough. I thought I would have been satisfied with a two-game suspension of March.
Yeah, and can I throw in one thing? Can I throw in a couple things, Drew, why I also think four games was too much? First off, I really believe, I you know, and this is my own opinion, I don't safely have any chance of preventing that goal. Like, if you remember, we talked about this after game one on the post-game show. Like, Jake Evans is a fast guy. He beat out the icing, if you remember. And it was a wrap. Like, it was, he was going to try to wrap that puck around and most likely score. So I don't think Scheifele really had any shot whatsoever. He was too far away. If you look at the replay, like, Scheifele is not even in the picture when Evans is behind the net. So I really don't think Scheifele had any chance. All Scheifele had to do was ease up, Dave. You know what I mean? Like, he just didn't. That's to me what was so egregious about it. I know Drew likes that big word that I use, the big Cree-com word that I use. Exactly. I don't know how to spell it, but that's another story. But all Scheifele had to do was stop up. Like, he followed through and plowed Evans, an unsuspecting guy. Because when you're wrapping the puck around into an empty net, you're just not expecting someone to come in on a charge. And it was charging. Forget this nonsense. People saying, oh, it's not really charging and his feet were on the ice. You're missing the point here. The other thing is that I would say is that four games in the playoffs is the equivalent of eight games during the regular season. A playoff suspension is not the same. I don't care what anybody says. Scheifele essentially misses the entire series, right? Like, we'll see what happens here. If the Jets are able to push it to six games, obviously he's going to get in for game six and possibly game seven. But that's why, Dave, I thought four games was too much, especially when you consider what Nazem Kadri got. And I realize that people don't want to factor in the record. But what was Mark Scheifele talking about yesterday in his press conference? He was talking about how, you know, he only had 12 penalty minutes, whatever it was. You know, he's had no history of suspensions. I think that does factor in. It factors into our, you know, criminal justice system. Obviously I have no personal experience with it, but, it factors in when you're talking about sentencing, right, in terms of priors. So I think
this is the guy who wrote the LSAT.
And got a 147, I might add. 35th percentile. Come on, Drew. Not bad.
Right.
I mean,
right,
I didn't get into law school, but
right in that juicy part of the curve is when George Costanza once said on Seinfeld, if I recall correctly. You know, look, it's the randomness of it, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I don't necessarily know that it's justice, and that, you know, there's any logic or reason or fairness to the suspension. But I think Mark Scheifele has to realize he can't put himself in the position where his fate is in the hands of the roulette wheel of the Department of Player Safety. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, my biggest takeaway from it is that Scheifele in that instance, and I know it's a bang bang play, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of emotion going through him at that exact time. You cannot put your fate in someone else's hands. And I think that's the problem. That's a funny comment from Comet there. If Scheifele needs lessons on how to fly by, he can ask Kyle Connor. That's a very funny comment. well done there, Comet. You might get the Illegal Curve comment of the day for Comet. That gets you nothing but our praise, so congratulations there. But, you know, you just can't put yourself in that position where, you know, we talk about it all the time, where a guy who turns into a hit, he can't put himself into a position where he's vulnerable. Scheifele can't put himself into a position where he's vulnerable to the whims of justice of the Department of Player Safety. That's where he particularly hurts the NHL. You know, the longer it took on Thursday for the announcement to come out, the less severe I thought it would be. I thought we were going to hear on Wednesday night, after game one, that Scheifele was going to have his hearing. That didn't happen until Thursday morning. And then it took until late Thursday evening. Like, it was close to 6 o'clock Central Time, if not past 6 o'clock Central Time.
No, I think it was 7 o'clock.
Well, okay. I mean, I know that, you know, it was later in the evening for sure, mm-hmm, that they finally came out and gave the suspension. And I was very surprised. I thought that the longer it took, it was going to be one, maybe even the thought crossed my mind that it might only be a fine or something.
Well, but- just to interject quickly, I agree with you because, I mean, obviously I had it ready to go on illegalcurve.com. But yeah. The funny part was what I was thinking to myself was you're only doing this if you kind of like if you release the news while you have a hockey game that's about to start, you're kind of taking the news cycle away from hockey, the games itself, to make this the story. And then either way, right, if you make it minimal, maybe you can distract people because you're watching hockey, which is why I agree with you. I thought that was leading into it was going to be more of a one-game suspension, but it'll quash a lot of the outrage because people are watching hockey. Mm-hmm. But instead, you make it four, which is like makes all of Canada. I mean, it was insane how the website blew up and everybody was talking about it. So it made it the whole story of the night. Everybody, I mean, I don't even know the scores from that night because that's all anybody was talking about was the Shifley suspension.
he was talking about the game on Thursday, as in not the game on Wednesday. That's but true. You know, you're right, Dave. It was a bizarre sort of sequence of events because you remember when Josh Archibald went after Logan Stanley, we found out that night that during the post game show when we were on with the Illegal Curve post game show, we found out that Archibald was going to have a hearing. Mm-hmm. So, and I expected to see that similar tweet from the Department of Player Safety, on Wednesday night. And then it took until Thursday morning, and then it took late Thursday for the announcement to come out. I do think that the NHL Department of Player Safety struggled with this one. And when they struggle with it, you sort of think that that's going to lead to a lesser punishment than he received. Obviously, I was wrong in that instance. But four games, to your point, Ezzy, four games being the equivalent of eight games come playoff time really makes it an eye-opening play. And I wonder how it's going to impact things going forward. You know, and this isn't a bit of an aside, but I saw a comment from somebody yesterday, and it was a really reasonable comment saying, why is it always a former player who leads the Department of Player Safety? Shouldn't it be interesting? Wouldn't it be interesting to get a referee or a former official in that role? And I thought there was some wisdom to that tweet and a wisdom to that comment saying that instead of just having random NHL former NHL players serve, two games at a time or 2 years at a time in that thankless role, maybe an official who's used to calling penalties might come with a different perspective, from a different perspective as it relates to the Department of Player Safety. And I sort of like that idea.
I was just going to
bring in our good friend from Montreal wearing a snazzy Montreal Expos hat. Our good buddy, Mark Dumont, joins us from Montreal. Mark, good morning. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. I imagine you came here, you asked me to come on to give my unbiased opinion about the hit, right?
Well, let's start with that because, I mean, Mark.
Actually, can we ask Newman, Mark? Can Newman let us know how many games Shifley should have gone?
Okay, before we get into this. Like, I mean, the role reversal in my life right now, I'm one of the few people that's gotten a really good year. At one point, I was eating pizza, drinking beer with a puppy on me, watching a playoff game at the Bell Center, getting paid for it. I mean, guys, like, I don't want to brag here, but geez, man, sometimes life is good. Like, it kicks you in the nuts about 99 times in a row, but once in a while, it just, delivers that poutine on a silver platter. So I can't wait to work with Newman before. Best coworker I've ever had.
Okay, you have to tell the audience.
And Mark, it'll be even better if the Expos come back to Montreal, right?
I was a Blue Jays fan, so I don't. Okay. I know. Just like I love the Pirates logo, I really like the Expos logo. I actually think, I'm one of those that, like, I big Blue Jays fan my entire life. When I came here, it was kind of, because I'm from Ottawa, I wanted to just kind of, integrate. But then I have all these 60-year-old men stopping me on the street, no joke. And they're like, let's talk about the Expos in the 70s. I'm like, they played at Jerry Park, I think, So, it's been
Just ask them where they were for Blue Monday. That's all you have to ask them in return is where were they for Blue Monday?
Oh, my God. It's like you see the sadness in these men's eyes there, like no joke. I'm walking and there's people like doing this on the side. And I'm like, what the hell is he? What are you doing there? And then they'll like they want to have a full out conversation, So it's there's a lot of sadness there left for the Expos. But hopefully the Habs can erase those memories that are going forward.
This is a complete segue. We were in Dallas once for a buddy's bachelor party. Ezzy and I were there, and we went to the Red River Showdown between Texas Longhorns and the Oklahoma Sooners, and we are decked out in Texas gear because why the hell not? You know, yeah. Not that we have any allegiance, but as we were leaving the stadium, okay. We were walking around. We were actually going to a Jets-Dallas Stars game that same night. The timing was quite fortuitous, and we were walking around downtown Dallas afterwards, decked out in our Texas Longhorns gear, and cars were just driving by and rolling down the windows and hollering.
Yeah.
Hook 'em horns. And we're all going with the Hook 'em horns logo back at them. It's just like,
it's fun, but it feels dangerous too. Like, you know, like the intensity is going up there. So
exactly. No, just glad we didn't come by any Sooners fans, or otherwise we'd be, we might be in a heap of trouble there.
Right.
Open carry state like Texas.
No. Nobody ever takes sports too seriously, right? And speaking of segues there, I'd like to make a quick note here. I mean, I actually, after the hit, I got emotional. I'll admit, Jake is a friend of mine. You know, I know his parents, Wayne and Marilyn, and I've seen him since, I was the first guy to interview him at the rookie tournament. Anyways, blah, blah, blah. And I got a little emotional. Like, I don't think Mark Scheifele is a dirty player whatsoever. I mean, you can't say he's a dirty player. You just can't. That play, obviously, when he changed his mind, here's the issue. People are arguing about back check and hit. It was clear he was backchecking. Then he changed his mind, right? Like, that's what it was to me. That doesn't change the overall results. But one thing I will say, I got frustrated. I think I called him cowardly. I think the play was cowardly. He's not a cowardly person. But you never go after families. And, like, I'm going to say this all Habs fans. I don't know how many did it. You just don't. Because that's more cowardly than any hit you can do in the NHL. So you never go after family. Never, never, never. Obviously, you know, have a thought for Evans' family. But you just never go after family. So I'm really disappointed that happened. And, you know, if anything, the fans should take the lead of the players, you know, just follow their lead because they're moving on from this. And I think that's probably the best for everyone. And I mean, when it comes down to it, guys, let's be honest. That's the biggest hit here is that the Jets lost Scheifele. Like, that's like, you're losing your best player for four games. Jeez, that's huge, you know? So like in the long run, you can't feel anger. Well, yeah, you can feel anger at the play, but like the actual result, yeah, injury. Overall, I think it hurt the Jets a lot more than it hurt the Canadians. Like, I mean, well, there's no way to argue that, right?
Right, absolutely right. And well said about your comments about people taking it beyond an appropriate level. And we talked about it on the Wednesday post-game show that we did, Mark, and it was about as bad of a 24 hours, I think, on social media between the hit on Wednesday and then maybe things started to calm down by maybe Friday morning. But
I don't think they have calmed down. I just to quickly interject here, Mark. I'm looking at our social media posts and it's amazing how many on YouTube people comment. And it's just like, sometimes I think to myself, like, are you actually signing this with your real name? Are you saying these things with your actual name? You're attaching your name to what you're saying.
Because
if you read it back, and I wrote this on the morning papers. I said, you know, it's one thing to hate a player, but when you've promoted that hatred from you hate a player to going after their family, you've gone from being a fan to a lunatic, and you actually need professional help at that point.
And we saw stuff about drug use. Like, let's yeah. Another thing I'd like to make clear, my colleagues in the media, stigmatizing addiction is not just stupid. It's actually really insulting to a lot of people around the world. So to me, it's clear here, you know, when Scheifele saw it and you could see in his eyes, like, you're like, oh, you know, he's on drugs. No, you effing idiot. Something just happened. His adrenaline was probably starting to come down a little bit. And then, you know, your brain starts to like process it. And you're like, holy crap, what did I just do? So I saw a player that was in shock because he's never done anything like this before. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if it was Downey, okay, you know, maybe. But Scheifele has a clean record. So I think actually, Dave, Habs fans have moved on, but because of the suspension and because of the win, right?
Right.
So, and I understand why people would be frustrated on the Winnipeg side here. And again, it was just like, it was such a unique play, right? Because I really think he was hustling to stop the goal, but then he was like, hey, no, obviously I'm pissed here. So, all in all, unfortunate for Evans, but fans and media need to spartan up when these things happen. Let the emotions flow. Let them flow away from social media, you know? Yeah. Like, go punch a wall.
Go, Mark, go for a run.
Mark, you know, the scary part is I saw on social media in advance of the series beginning, people saying it's going to be tough to hate the Jets and Jets fans saying the same to have. It's going to be hard to hate you because we did the same thing. No, it's true because like Jets fans hate the Oilers from the
there's no animosity between. Yeah, like there's nothing,
and,
right?
And obviously Montreal and Toronto have that heated rivalry.
And so, Toronto, Vancouver, and Toronto, Calgary, and Toronto. And there must be some sort of common link there. I'm with you, Dave. I actually wrote, I'm like, yo, we got to build up the animosity here. You know, Manitobans don't recycle. They hate puppies. And then I'm like, yeah, there's not enough bad blood. Holy shit, Mark, shut up sometimes, you know? Like,
but and then I saw Murat sent you a picture of his puppy, right?
Right, exactly. So, which, by the way, shout out to Murat, really, really good guy here. So, but I mean, all in all, I still don't feel like there's, like, yesterday was almost like an emotional letdown. I feel like both teams are just kind of like, I don't want to push it here. I don't want to push the play. And obviously, you know, here's the key here is that as good as Price has been, Hellebuck's, I mean, obviously, I think he's a superior goalie. And I think statistically we can say that. Yeah. This isn't over for the Habs. Like, this idea that, you know, everyone's talking about the next round. Hellebuck will keep them in every single damn game. I mean, like, and obviously the Jets picked up their play there, but Connor Hellebuck, in my opinion, is probably the best goalie in the NHL right now. So this idea of underrating, and, you know, they got a couple weak ones by his standards. I don't think it'll keep happening. Like, in game one, obviously, Connor Hellebuck scares me. Like, he's terrifying. He's a terrifying goalie. Everyone talks about Price being calm. Look at Connor Hellebuck. Like, that is the image of calm. So I have a feeling he hasn't said his last word in this series yet.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Our guest is Mark Dumas, special contributor for the Montreal Canadiens. Mark's appearance on the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
Which is delicious, if I remember correctly. Sorry, Kurt, keep going.
You know, by all means, it is delicious, and we don't need to add more heat to this conversation about smoked meat versus the Illegal Curve Sandwich. We don't need to go into that. There's room in the world for everybody, especially sandwich-wise.
Exactly, and same thing with bagels. Every city is allowed to have them except for Toronto. Yeah, exactly. I agree.
And Mark, I don't know if you saw this. I tweeted it at you, but our friends at Bagelsmith Winnipeg here in downtown Winnipeg, they actually have a friendly bet going with St. Viator. So if the Habs win, then Bagelsmith is going to make a donation to Main Street Project. And nice. If the Jets win, then St. Viator has agreed to make a donation to a Montreal charity. So, just absolutely awesome.
Food both Montreal and charity, style bagels. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, you can't go wrong. That's what life is all about, right?
I'll tell you guys a secret here. Montreal bagels, I don't know how, I retweeted this to my followers. Montreal bagels are super overrated. I mean, like, you can get them in Ottawa from Kettleman's. You can get them in Winnipeg. I mean, they're good. Mate, let's calm down here on the bread. You know, like people here, I swear to God, they're picking up pitchforks and like, oh, you like Fairmount? Like, well, I was going to marry your daughter, but you know, now I'm going to burn your entire house to the ground because I like, it's crazy. Now, I do remember that, Ezra. I was actually eating a St. Viator bagel at the time because I bought, they go bad in like 2 days, which is a great sign. I stopped buying store-bought bagels. Yeah, or freeze them, but I live right beside one, as you can see.
Right on.
And I stopped eating like store-bought bagels when I went on vacation for a month once, and I came back and they were perfect. And I was like, "Ooh, like what kind of science is at play here now?" So I'm definitely on board with the fresh bagels now. And I hear you guys have a booming bagel scene.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, let's get back to the hockey. We've covered.
No. Let's talk food. Let's talk more food here. Let's go. What's on that sandwich, Drew?
Okay, fine. You're gonna make me do this?
Yeah.
Thick cut city rye bread, honey mustard, chicken schnitzel, fried salami, cheddar cheese, and fried onions.
Chicken schnitzel. Okay, schnitzel is so underrated, eh? Like, there's this little schnitzel restaurant that opened up near the farm where I usually go work in the summer. I know I sound like a 1930s hockey player, but like, and they have this schnitzel place, and holy shit, schnitzel, man. Like, where have you been my whole life, schnitzel? So anyways, I recommend everyone to go get that sandwich. It sounds delicious.
There you go. And we need to put more breading around meat.
Let's send one to Mark Express. Like, what are we doing? How have we not sent one to Mark already? To be honest with you, all the times he's been on the show.
Well,
common
courtesy, Drew.
I don't eat very often. I'm not big into food. You know, I like to maintain my proper figure. Okay. I like my bikinis to fit nice in the summer, but I would probably try it. You know?
It's hot Mark summer. You've heard of hot girl summer? It's hot Mark summer.
Yeah, exactly. I'll try most things once and everything once and most things twice. So yeah, absolutely. You can FedEx that to me, no problem. There's a whole like food delivery FedEx in Quebec. It's how we get poutines around. So it works out well.
Next time you come to Winnipeg, the sandwich will be on us, buddy.
Exactly. No, perfect. Yeah. And the other thing here, we have to stop with the whole like, and Montreal, like, oh, Winnipeg. I'm like, guys, relax. Like it's not cold out. Like,
yeah, dude, we get like, 1 month of summer, Mark. Like, come on.
Okay, Mark, it was plus 40 yesterday. I'm not sure right? how much warmer it could
have. But it's also like, gonna snow tomorrow though, Dave.
Yes, okay, that's the other part. But like does the Canadian media think that it's Hoth or something? Like that there's no summers there? And I mean it's not like Montreal is like a beacon of beaches and sunlight either, right? So yeah, it's
it goes the south of France and it goes the West Isle. I believe that's how it works.
Yeah, it's mostly Cannes down here, mostly
the prairies right here.
Okay, as you go.
So hockey, right?
Yeah, exactly. hockey sports. Mark, just you know, looking at the first two games of the series, what have kind of been the main takeaways, right? Because you mentioned Carey Price, and he's been great. He hasn't had to steal games, but he's continued his play from the Leaf series. But what are you kind of seeing as what's happening in terms of the Jets' inability to create offense? Because we know Price is still a very good goaltender. He might not be the Price from the 2010 Olympics, but he's still really good. Picked up his eighth shutout in the playoffs. But is it just that the Habs are completely stifling the Jets' offense? Because it seems like that neutral zone is quicksand right now.
Jacques Lemaire would be very proud of the Habs right now. Yes. I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, someone said to me, yeah, they're so boring right now. They're just shutting down everything. They're letting, Price clean up the scraps. And I'm like, good. Like, you don't, this team isn't talented enough to run and gun with the Jets. You know, you look at that depth. And to me, game two was a huge wake-up call to the Habs. You're not going to be able to hold on to a 1-0 lead against the Jets. Like, Connor's going to wake up. We know this. There's a lot of talent on that in that lineup. And if they kind of fall back in that defensive shell, like we saw in the second half of the game when the Jets woke up, I think that's going to be a big issue for Montreal. Like Price, you can't deno your way to victory like you did against Matthews in this case. Obviously, again, losing Scheifele, huge like blessing for the Habs in terms of the defensive assignments, but there's still so much talent there. So I think the Habs have done a pretty good job counterpunching, laying low, playing a boring style, if we're being perfectly honest. But boring doesn't matter if you keep winning games. Like I think with this roster, and if we're being objective, it's the right style to go with. Like, and it might, like yesterday, I have to admit, and I think you guys will admit it too, it wasn't the greatest hockey game.
But it was the worst, Mark.
I said
it was one of the worst hockey games I've ever watched.
I mean, at one point the Jets were defending a 0-1 deficit. I'm like, what? Like, they're not even, but you're right. It was the Habs were stifling them in the neutral zone. And, fans will never watch it again. Coaches will marry the game tape on that. Like they'll be thrilled. So I think another thing for the Habs is that their young guys have been stepping up. Caulfield isn't scoring, but he's putting a ton of shots on net, right? Like he's reminding me of like early Patrick Laine without the goals, and he could identify his goalie in a police lineup. So that's the big difference there. But other than that, Kotkaniemi stepping up big time, Suzuki stepping up big time. And what I've been impressed by the most is that they've really they've run their top four down. Like they've ground them down in terms of minutes and they've reacted fairly well for a couple of, it's funny. I say old guys. I mean, like I'm almost 40, so maybe I should chill with the old guys stuff. But the old guys, I think honestly, like everyone's writing Weber's obituary. He's still there, man. Like, stop doubting Shea Weber. He's a model of consistency. I think Jeff Petrie hasn't quite elevated to the level he should be, but to me that the Edmondson Sherratt, I mean that play yesterday, like that's what you want to see from your defenseman. So I think the big four, so to speak, even with the increased minutes, have done fantastic. That's been a huge factor with the Montreal Canadiens. Now, will it last? Like you're grinding down your top four at the end of the first round into the second round. That's risky. So I think they're going to have to play guys like Kulak and Gustafsson a little more often, to make it through the series.
You know, Mark, one of the things that I've noticed though is that Montreal's just rolling all four lines and you're getting a lot of production like that Perry Stahl Armia line have been talk about a breath of fresh air. I mean, right. they've really kind of, it appears to me. And again, I haven't watched Montreal obviously as much as I watched the Jets, but they really seem to have elevated their level of play and they've certainly outperformed the Jets fourth line. So if Montreal is going to win this, obviously it's going to take that line continuing to elevate their game and continue to do what they're doing. But are you a little surprised based on how well they seem to be playing?
I mean, okay, Eric Staal was like persona non grata in Montreal for a while. Like everyone's like, hey, we respect him, cool, but like, why is he in the lineup? You know? And I think people remember that breakaway yesterday when that kind of reminded me of like, man, if Staal was 10 years younger, that probably would have been a goal. But here's the other thing: is that until Toffoli scored that goal, Eric Staal was leading the Canadiens in points. from the fourth line. You know, so that, yeah, Dave, it surprised me so much. But I think we have to stop disrespecting veterans that know, you know, it's kind of like a horse race, like a long distance horse race here. You're holding back your horses a little bit when you, because you know, like you don't have that energy to run around with 20-year-olds during a regular season. I have to give him a lot of credit. I think he's been making a lot of good decisions. And we talk about bringing veteran leadership and you know, everyone criticized the Leafs. They brought in that veteran leadership, but you know, I've never been a big fan of saying bringing guys that won the cup, but if you see there between the two, the Habs veterans that had won a cup, they performed. The Perrys, you know, the Stahls, the Edmondsons. And I'll give a big shout out to Jake Allen, who was amazing during the regular season. The Habs wouldn't be here right now without him. Like, so that to me was the best signing of the year. And again, Toffoli, you know, another veteran that scored. And whereas Thornton, Galchenyuk, Foligno, like these are all guys that have chased a lot of respect, but they don't have that winning pedigree. So I will say I'm eating a lot of crow here, Dave. I was all about like, no, you don't need physicality, blah, blah, blah. They're kind of like, they won the war of attrition with Toronto. I don't think it'll work with Winnipeg because they match up very well, if you know, in terms of physicality. But it's not just the veterans. I think everyone was eviscerating Schaum. I think you have to give Schaum a little bit of credit here. Like, I mean, he outcoached Keith, right? He's been lucky. You know, a lot of good players, like, for example, like DeMelo and Stastny, like the Habs have gotten a little bit of Stanley Cup luck, if we're going to, you know, be perfectly honest. But I think Schaum, for having taken over a team midseason, condensed schedule, COVID, I think he's actually kind of coming into his own. I was a little hesitant to praise him, but I have to give, you know, he's up 2-0 in the second round with arguably he's going to be an underdog until they go out, right? So I think he's been doing a pretty good job, all things considered.
Mark Dumont is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. And Mark, you mentioned how the Habs have really been relying on four defensemen and that their bottom pair, you know, particularly Erik Gustafsson, a guy that they acquired at the deadline for, I mean, I think it was a seventh round pick or something. So they basically got him for free. Yeah. Why is he playing over a guy like Alex Romanov, who really had
are you every Habs fan? Like, come on.
Well, I mean, Romanov, when I saw him this year, was noticeable for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
Yet to play Gustafsson, and where you clearly don't have more faith in him than 8 minutes a game, it just sort of I don't quite understand it.
I'll put on my coaching hat for a minute, which I mean I should never wear, because if I was a coach, I'd be fired in about 32 minutes. But here's what I will say. Let's keep in mind here that first-year defenseman, like, I know everyone in Montreal is clamoring for Romanov. He's a little bit older. He has a KHL experience. The same thing happened in the KHL in the playoffs. They stopped playing him. He's a first-year defenseman. He's been through a lot. And he does make a lot of high-risk plays. I would understand more inserting him against the Jets, and I think that'll happen. Against the Leafs, like, a high-risk play against Matthews, very dangerous. What I will say for Gustafsson, and I mean, this guy instills no confidence when he plays the puck, right? Like, he's terrifying. But he's really good at relaunching the play. Like, the Canadians in transition are better when Gustafsson's on the ice. He has their best stats, guys. Here's the crazy part. Yeah, he's playing the most sheltered hockey you will ever see in your entire life. He's playing about 32 seconds a game. But he's crushing those 32 seconds a game. He had a really bad giveaway in game one. But, like, if I go full nerd, statistically speaking, he's been their best defenseman. Like, he's at like 75% control of shots, high danger chances. Again, sheltered, sheltered, sheltered. There's so much context to do here. And when you watch him play, it's like, holy crap, man, what's going on here? Like, this guy is so scary. But the Canadiens have to score in the rush, and Gustafsson helps them in transition. And that's very important for the Montreal Canadiens. So I think, again, Schaum took the right decision there. And I'm with you guys. I was all about wanting to see Romanov. But I don't think you can actually argue against how Gustafsson's played. And since he's gone in, they've scored more off the rush and they've started winning. So I'm going to give him some credit there. And obviously he plays with Brett Kulak, who I'm a big fan of. But yeah, all in all, I totally get why people want to see Romanov. But first-year defenseman, guys, like, when did it become that now we expect our first-year defenseman to be in there? Like, for my entire life, first-year defenseman, come playoffs. It could, buddy. You're number seven, and if you get in, you get in, but that's about it, right?
It's because we watched Cale Makar come play for Colorado, leaping right in, looking like a Norris Trophy champion.
I have a crush on Cale Makar. Cale Makar is unbelievable. He's going to win the Norris Trophy.
And like Semyon Girard, and you see all these young guys. Like, yeah. Okay, watching Cale Makar at the blue line just embarrass these guys. Oh, my God. But Romanov does that, like the risky play at the blue line. I'll give that. Everyone's worried about his confidence. Look, you don't worry about Romanov's confidence. But he does those plays that Makar does at the blue line, you know, trying to dangle 45 guys. Makar does it, like, jokingly. I think he almost taunts him. Romanov will lose the puck once in a while doing that. And you just don't have margins for error right now for the Montreal Canadiens. Like, they had to play a perfect game against the Leafs, and I think they did. And Gustafsson, guys, for like the 7 minutes he's been given, has played really well. So I'd like to see Romanov do. No rush right now. He wouldn't have made a difference in the Leafs series, if I'm being perfectly honest.
And I think there's a lot of parallels, Mark, with Ville Heinola here, right? Like, he was the most outstanding defenseman at the 2021 World Juniors, but right now it's, you know, he's been passed on the depth chart. And yeah, Jordy Benn is obviously not as skilled as Ville Heinola, but you know, Paul Maurice is going with the veteran to play on that third pair. Who knows? Maybe Heinola will play game three in Montreal, but I think there's a lot of similarities there between Romanov and Heinola.
You're trying to mitigate mistakes on the third pairing, right? You're not going to get, obviously, the plus side for Gustafsson is that he does create some offense from the back end. It's mostly on the power play, but you essentially want your third pairing to get out there with not a goal allowed. And if they get a goal, it's great, right? And I will give a shout out to Jordy Benn. When he's played on the proper side, he can be a very, very good. I mean, I know he's slowed down, but he can be a very good third pairing defenseman. This is the key here.
Yep.
In his usage.
Yeah.
You shove him up the lineup, you're going to have an issue. But as a third pairing defenseman goes, I think he can be very efficient. And you know, Heinola wouldn't even get that many minutes, right? He wouldn't be, I mean, he's good in transition, you know, passes the puck well. But is that what you're looking for from your third line? No, you're looking for them to not bleed, essentially. And I think that's how coaches think about it. And, you know, it's so easy for us to criticize, but like, if we go back 99%, well, maybe not 99, but a lot of the choices coaches make turn out to be 100% correct, right? Like, if we're being perfectly honest, we're really harsh on coaches, but most of them know what they're doing. It's almost like they're professionals in a job market where there's only 31 of them in the world, you know, almost.
If we weren't going to criticize coaches, if we weren't going to be armchair quarterbacks, what the hell are we going to do on this show? And all
right. It's like, anytime after a shootout, they're like, well, why did they go with the guys that didn't score? Like, well, no, you're right. They should have gone with guys that score. The coach was like, hey, you're not going to score. You're not going to score. You're not going to score. Get out there. You know? So anyways, it's what can I say?
Yeah, and Mark, you know, I wanted to final question here, just about the fans. Like, you know, obviously, you know, there are 2,500 fans in the Leaf series, and it seemed like there were 25,000 fans, to be honest with you. And I think I've texted you this many times before. Like, I think, you know, sorry to Bell MTS Place, but I think Bell Center Montreal is the best building in the NHL, and I think they're both very good. And you know, I remember, you know, being there watching a Habs Bruins game back in 2005 after the full year lockout. And I was like, I'm lucky to be in this building right now. This is amazing if you're a hockey fan. But the question I had for you is, obviously it was a factor and they're going to get a boost. And I'm not sure, maybe you can clarify if there are going to be still 2,500 or if it's going to, they've increased that, but regardless if it's 2,500 or more, what kind of impact are you going to, do you think that's going to have on the series? Because Dave made a good point. Dave was saying that he thinks that could actually benefit the Jets just as much as could benefit the Habs.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, there's two things. It's going to be 2,500. What day are we? Like, I go by game day. Are we? Holy
tomorrow.
Shit.
They play tomorrow, Sunday.
It's June?
You can say shit, by the way, Mark. We're not on TSN anymore. So
it's June? Yeah. Good for you guys. It's June? Oh, my God. Wow. Anyhow. It's June? Okay, so I will say two things.
You paid your taxes about 3 months ago. It's okay, though.
Pay my taxes? No, okay. So two things. First of all, I got to laugh at the Leafs. Like, listen, I took it easy a little bit on the Leafs here because we all know they're dead inside, Leafs fans, and it's like, you know, the universe kicks you in the crotch so many times. You don't want to go out and, like, be the 12th guy to kick them in the crotch. But the arrogance that they had there, like, we've played before fans, you know, in front of fans before, and we've had lineup changes before. We're the better team. Doesn't matter. It was a factor, absolutely. But as Dave said, and also it's going to be 2,500, whatever, June, whatever is tomorrow, maybe 5,000 Monday. Quebec, I will give them credit, have done a pretty good job getting their jabs in. So we might be able to go up to 5,000, but I mean, we're not in a rush to do that. The thing is, like Dave said, it's a double-edged sword, right? A lot of these guys can get motivated hearing fans like come down on them and boo every, like a gust of wind could hit Perry, and obviously he'll fall over and fans will boo, you know, like boo the hell out of it. And there is some motivation factor there. So it's all about the fan factor. It's all about who jumps in the lead first. Like, not to be like every shitty analyst on every TSN show that says, you know, when they score the first goal, they'll probably win. But if you factor in the fans to that, you're setting the momentum for them, right? So no, I'm with you. it can be a bad. But the key thing here is that, and this is going to be super cheesy, like life is returning to Montreal, and the Bell Center is the mood ring for the entire city. You know, nice. When the Habs win, everyone's so nice. Like people wait in line at the Metro. People wait in line at the Metro. You speak in English and they don't give you a dirty look. When the Habs lose, people are dicks, man. They're just dicks. Like they're just jerks all over the place. Bagels are flying left and right. And it's like, so this, like, and not to be too cheesy, but the buzz is coming back to our city. And you guys have probably all been here. There's always a buzz in Montreal, like the life. And that got sucked out of the pandemic. I don't want to be like, woe is us, but Montreal without that buzz, without the people, without the team, is Ottawa. It's a dirtier version of Ottawa, let's be honest. So shout out to my people in Ottawa. It's boring, right? So it's not just the fans. It's kind of like the entire city is coming back to life. Restaurants are opening. We're starting to get people on the street. And obviously the Bell Center is a big part of that. But we all know, like everyone says, when things go right in Montreal, things are perfect. When things go wrong, the fans will let them know. So I'm with Dave on that one. It's all about getting the momentum early, essentially.
Mark Dumont is a special contributor to the Montreal Canadiens. Mark, excellent as always. You're a good buddy. And sandwiches on us next time you're here. Always appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And I appreciate you bringing on someone that works for the Habs. That's pretty cool. And shout out to all the Jets fans. I will say this, even though you guys know we're talking, it was ugly on social media. My interactions, except for like the anonymous trolls, 99% were actually really reasonable. And I've never had an issue with people from Winnipeg. So, you know, let's all move on here and keep trashing the Leafs whenever we get a chance.
That's right. We can all bond over trashing the Leafs, and we certainly won't accuse you of being on Red Bull, Sudafed, smelling salts, or anything like that. I know. It was awful.
God. You know, the best part about the internet is everyone gets a voice, and the worst part about the internet is everyone gets a voice. Yeah. Exactly. Cheers, amen. Guys.
Thanks, bye, Mark. Thanks, Mark. There he goes. Mark Dumont, a special contributor to the Montreal Canadiens, our good friend. Joining
Mark
us
is an absolute beauty.
He is.
I mean, I get jealous every time I hear that microphone. I think our mics are pretty good, and then Mark brings out his big boy, and we're like,
phew. Yeah, I know. I know. It's intimidating. We got mic envy, but that's okay.
We do.
Quick update from
as long as we don't have something else envy, Drew, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, Ezzy, you didn't need to say it. It was implied just simply by the comment. You didn't need to go there, but thank you.
Belaboring the point. Anyways. Thank you, Ginsburg.
Yes, exactly. Very exactly. A quick update from the Winnipeg Jets practice or skate. It's not really a full practice, a very optional skate for the Jets before they head off to Montreal for games 3 and 4 tomorrow and Monday. Sparsely attended seems to be the words used. No sign of Paul Stastny. People who played in game 2 that are skating this morning, Neil Pionk, Christian Vesalainen, Jansen Harkins, and Jordy Benn, certainly does not give us any insight into the Winnipeg Jets lineup for tomorrow. We'll hear from Paul
Maurice. Attribution. Who were you reading that?
Sorry, that's courtesy of our friends, both Murat Atesh and Sarah Orleski. They are the ones who are tweeting about it. We'll obviously hear more from Paul Maurice later on this morning. I don't necessarily expect he's going to give any answers about the lineup for tomorrow, but tune into illegalcurve.com for all the latest from the Winnipeg Jets skate this morning, and then game day skate tomorrow. Of course, illegalcurve.com is your resource for everything Winnipeg Jets related whenever you tend to need that news. We'll be back tomorrow night with the Illegal Curve post-game show. That'll be following the game. It'll be a weird start time for the
5 o'clock start, right, Drew?
Yeah, it's a 5 o'clock game, so post game maybe around 7:30, 7:40, somewhere around there. So a bit of a weirder time, but
it's right before you go to bed, so it's perfect.
There you go, exactly. I don't even have to stay up late tomorrow. For better or worse, that's when we'll be back with the post game show, and then Monday's post game show, a more normal time, right around I think 9:30, 9:40 for the post game show on Monday. So certainly a very busy weekend in store for us on the website, illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve. And of course, back here on our YouTube channel. And while you're at it, subscribe, hit the like button. That's all we ask of you. We ask you to keep the chat clean. And you guys did a great job of doing that. You guys and girls did a great job of keeping it clean and respectful in the chat this morning. On your way out, if you haven't already done it, smash that like button, give us a thumbs up, leave a comment. We always love the interaction and the feedback that we get from our audience. Want to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and Seagram's. Support these fine
companies, some of them local, some of them national. They support Illegal Curve Hockey. That's the important part. Support them so that they can keep supporting Illegal Curve Hockey. Dave Manuka is in the top right. Ezra Ginsberg is in the bottom of the screen. I am your host, Drew Mandel. Until tomorrow night and the Illegal
See Curve you at the splash, splash pad in a couple hours, Drew.
You will not see me there whatsoever, Ezzy, and in keeping with our rule to not see each other actually in person, we've been going on another 18 or so months like that, and hopefully we'll, maybe that'll come to an end this summer. Maybe we can have a beer together, and then that'll be the one and only beer we have together, because I'll regret my decision. But Dave, you and I can get together more often than that. Anyways, on that note, for Dave, for Ezra, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for watching. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.